the airline said it would backfire on consumers. We're still waiting. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. We're going to close out the year this week on the special feature with a few interviews related to stories I found to be some of the more interesting of 2010. After years of lobbying federal lawmakers to create an airline passengers' bill of rights, Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org was as surprised as many of us when the U.S. Department of Transportation imposed a rule against tarmac strandings over 3 hours without being mandated to do it by Congress. The airlines said it would result in widespread flight cancellations, as the airlines acted to limit their exposure to fines, which could reach $27,000 per passenger stranded. But it became clear after just a couple months that the rule was working as intended, with none of the hyperbolic calamities predicted by the airlines. When I spoke with Kate in July, there were only 2 full months of data, and she'd been criticized for saying "I told you so" in a news release from Flyers Rights after only the first month. She was ready to admit she may have spoken too soon.
The only reason I say I might have been a little hasty was that the backlash that happened after that was vigorous on behalf of the airlines, basically saying it's premature to tell whether or not the rule is a success. And I would say there's some truth to that. We do need to go through a few months, and I would like to see 6 months before any studies or reports are done on it. And I say 6 months because we started the rule right at the beginning of a heavy travel time. And September and October and early parts of November are notoriously extremely slow. So in order for the statistics to be fair and correct, they should include the summer months and the fall months, and then take a look at what's happened. Maybe even wait till after Christmas and see how it affects flights during the holidays. The statistics so far show that cancellations are only up a fraction, and that fraction includes Spirit Airlines strike, which caused a great deal of cancellations to happen. So that's not an accurate way of looking at cancellations for purposes of the new rule. We're not getting any calls on our hotline now from domestic folks stranded on tarmacs. We're only getting calls from international flights stranded on tarmacs, which were excluded from the rule. So there it is.
All right, let's talk about how things are being juggled. There's clearly been a lack of motivation on the part of the Bureau of Transportation Statistics to really dig into this in the past. And is there a separate category now for reporting delays that are blamed on the three-hour rule, or are they still being blamed when they happen, cancellations, on whatever the underlying cause was, whether it's weather or mechanical or what?
It's always the underlying cause. And the only investigation that the Department of Transportation does is if we get a complaint that an airline may have violated the rule. There were 5 such complaints that we turned over to them for the month of May. The complaints that we turned over appear to have been partially handled correctly and may have been entirely handled correctly, and yet still the passengers were not happy about the way those played out. But the reporting requirements for the airlines are the same as they always were, weather, ATC, mechanical, and those types of things. And the three-hour rule doesn't even factor in. They can't blame the rule for why they canceled flights. But they're telling passengers on a lot of flights, when their flights are canceled, that it's because of the rule. They're trying to create bad will toward the rule inside these aircraft, but the passengers so far have not been fooled.
Well, now, can passengers feel free to call Flyers Rights when they're being told that, so that you can at least find out whether that was the case on that individual flight?
Yes, and they should. We want every drop of information that we can get from these events. And I'll give you an example. One of the women that contacted me in May was stuck on the tarmac for 5 hours in Houston. It was a diversion. They turned the heat or the air conditioning off inside the plane. They did pull up portable stairs at the 2.5 hour mark and said, you can get off the plane, but you can't get back on.
Mm-hmm.
And at 2.5 hours, they served 1 6-ounce bottle of water and a granola bar. So they did have the opportunity to get off the plane, but not back on. But what infuriated her were 2 things. The air conditioning was off, and the Department of Transportation never regulated that the air conditioning had to stay on, as it is in the Senate bill that we have before Congress. And secondly, they were going to invite folks on the plane that were going to Dallas-Fort Worth that had not been able to get on other flights. So the few people that did vacate their seats, they were going to fill them with other people getting on the plane, but the folks that really wanted off that didn't live in Houston were told that they would not be able to get back on the plane. So these are the kinds of situations that we're hearing about, which actually the airline did honor the rule to the letter of the law, but it still didn't totally take care of a few folks' needs in these situations. So there may be some perfecting of the rule that needs to happen, but so far the rule is really working, and it's a resounding success.
Okay, now, you mentioned legislation that's in the Senate. Is Flyers' Right still pursuing a legislative solution that goes over the head of the DOT?
Yes, because the DOT rule is fragile. If there's a new administration, it could go away. We're already aware that Petri, the ranking member of the House Aviation Subcommittee, has ordered the Government Accountability Office to do a study of the unintended consequences of the three-hour rule. They don't like it. They've never liked it. They want rid of it. So we desperately need to get what we have now before Congress passed. If we don't get this version in the FAA bill, there'll be a new Congress, and if there's a power shift, we could lose our chances altogether.
All right, Kate, when we come back from the break, I want to talk briefly about a new wrinkle in what airports are allowed to do about congestion and delays. Kate Hanai is my guest, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through performance. At Cirrus, performance is not simply the measurement of a single design parameter. Rather, it's a total package. It's optimum balance of speed, efficiency, comfort, safety, ease of flight, and quality. We call it Cirrus Flying 2.0. Aren't you ready to feel the freedom?
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Kate Hanai is with me of FlyersRights.org. We're talking about air travel this summer. And Kate, there was an interesting court decision that came down last week. It was a case between the airlines and Airports Council International North America. And the issue was whether airports should have the right to charge landing fees based on congestion pricing, so that if a whole bunch of airlines decide to schedule more flights into a time window than can possibly physically take off from an airport, they could be charged more for that, encouraging them to spread it out around the clock a little more. And the airports won this, and I don't know if this will have any immediate effect, but what is your take on this, and do you think that the airports have a valid position here?
Absolutely. The airports, if you think about the stranding events that have happened, many people don't even remember the name of the air carrier in an event. When you think about what happened last August, you think Rochester. Mm-hmm. When you think about JetBlue, you think JFK. You know, some people associate JetBlue with JetBlue because that was a very large event. But many of these long tarmac strandings or even these multiple taxi outs are associated with the airport themselves, and the airports lose reputation. And people then want to go to a different airport. The airports also have to deal with the congestion inside themselves. They're highly motivated to have throughput, to get people out of the airport so they can sort of reload at all times in order to have a smooth and efficient system. Mm-hmm. I mean, they want you in the airport to shop. They'd rather have you in the airport spending money than stuck out on a plane. But what they'd really like is smooth throughput so that, you know, people are in and out and in and out within a reasonable amount of time, making room for the new folks that are going to be coming in and out. Otherwise, things get really clogged at certain airports, and it's very untenable for them. The airports and the airlines are notoriously at each other's throats over these issues, even though they have a symbiotic relationship and need each other. And a lot of money exchanges hands between the airlines and the airports. But I think it's a good victory for the airports. The airlines have been fighting the PFC increases for the airports to use that money to increase their capacity. The airlines, and I don't understand. I don't understand why the airlines don't want the airports to have PFC increases. It makes no sense to me. Because the airports are going to have to increase capacity as air travel picks up. So I think the airports have been on the short end of the stick with congestion and overflow and overfill and the ability for them to deal with the capacity, and that the airlines seem to have unfettered access to overscheduling without any restrictions.
Well, it's interesting. You would not be the first person to notice the hypocrisy in an airline charging a family of four $200 for their check bags and wanting to deny the airport an increase from $4.50 to $7 per ticket for the facilities charge.
Right. Doesn't it seem ridiculous? I just can't. I mean, since they need each other, why aren't they supporting each other? And why is there all this anger? And I believe the anger stems from this sort of unbridled, unfettered access that airlines have had to Congress and not being regulated in the ways that would be meaningful to both protect the passengers and the airports. And the airports are very frustrated, and they should be. And again, it's their reputation that's really on the line. When you hear about American Airlines having a problem at Dallas-Fort Worth, eventually it's, remember what happened in Dallas. You know, it's not, you know, remember American Airlines. They seem to be able to recoup their reputation fairly quickly from these events, but the airports can't. I heard that over and over when I was on the task force from the airports, you know, about how they are associated with the airlines' created problems.
Well, you know, and it's especially interesting in that there's no competitive disadvantage if the airport fees go up because they're charged evenly. It would have the effect of raising all tickets by, well, $2.50 in the proposal that the airports had, you know, going forth now. And it's not like it would give one airport an advantage over another, whereas the a la carte fees actually do.
Well, the a la carte fees, that's a whole. I have a very, very solid opinion about the a la carte fees. And I actually don't think you'll disagree with me on this, Paul, but you might. They separated out those fees for one diabolical reason, because any fees that are non-essential don't have to be taxed at the 7.5% tax that they are when they're included in the base fare. And my strong opinion is that the airlines would not be unbundling if they were forced to pay that tax. And I say that because their accounting costs and the lengths to which they have to go to hide those fees are pretty incredible. You know, they're posting them all kinds of different places. There's no one place to look. The accounting fees have to be somewhat burdensome, but because they don't have to pay the 7.5% tax to the Aviation Trust Fund, which is there to fund the repair work on the runways and there to fund the air traffic control modernization or repairs to the air traffic control system. It's there to help with gate issues and safe dock issues at airports that make travel more smooth and more safe for airline passengers. They have now totally avoided funding the Aviation Trust Fund by unbundling and taking all of the rewards for that. So when people ask me, well, how would passengers feel about having to pay that tax? My answer is, we're already going to pay. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to pay now, in addition to these unbundling fees, for all of the things that are not going to be funded through the Aviation Trust Fund, which is being depleted.
Well, Kate, there's going to be no end of issues for flyers' rights to tackle. go get them, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, thank you.
We've now been through the summer and the fall and the holidays, and the DOT's tarmac stranding rule is still producing a tremendous benefit to passengers with no detectable downside. The rule has been so successful, in fact, that it's fading into being a non-story, especially after being eclipsed by the TSA issues of the last few months. Kate Hanai is the founder of Flyers Rights and still takes calls from airline passengers in their moments of mistreatment by the airlines. Find more details on the web at flyersrights.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.